Thank you for listening to this Podcast One Sportsnet production, available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Does this sound familiar? I'm not going very far. I'm in a rush. It's too uncomfortable. Sometimes I just forget. Don't kid yourself. There's no such thing as a good excuse for not buckling up. If you've used any of these excuses or any others, you're putting yourself at risk of injury or death. In 2017, more than 10,000 people were unbuckled when they were killed in crashes. That's 51% of people killed in motor vehicle crashes that were not wearing seat belts. No matter what kind of vehicle you drive, wearing your seatbelt is the best defense in a crash. Even when you sit in the back seat, you still need to buckle up. That goes when you ride in taxis and use ride-sharing services, too. Cops are on the lookout and writing tickets, so why take the risk? In 2017 alone, seatbelts saved nearly 15,000 lives. So do the smart thing and buckle up every trip, day or night. Click it or ticket. This episode of the Steve Austin Show is also brought to you free today by BetOnline.ag. The start of May has been full of some incredible excitement in sports. The NBA playoffs, the NHL playoffs, Major League Baseball, and more. Get in on the action at BetOnline.ag and use the promo code PODCAST1 for your 50% welcome bonus. BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts and exclusive partner of Podcast One Sportsnet.
The following program is a PODCAST1.com production.
From Hollywood, California, by way of the Broken Skull Ranch, this is the Steve Austin Show.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Now, here's Steve Austin.
All right, everybody, welcome to Steve Austin Show. I am currently out on vacation recharging batteries, but just because I'm recharging the batteries, we still got business to take care of. In the meantime, we'll be playing some of the most requested Steve Austin Show classics that have been locked away in the archives. I got a great one for you this week, and here's my producer, Sean, to tell you all about it.
What's good, everybody? It's producer Sean here with another classic episode of the Steve Austin Show. Today, we bring you episode number 355, The Revival, original air date, August 30th, 2016. I heard from Steve today, and he said, Sean, I hope you're bringing people a great episode that everybody's going to love. Well, I think you're going to dig this one because we've got the former WWE Tag Team Champions and former two-time NXT Tag Team Champions, The Revival, Scott Dawson and Dash Wilder on this classic episode. They talk about their pro wrestling memories from growing up in the South, and they talk about living life in the WWE Performance Center, as well as life on the road as an NXT star, which they were at this time, just coming off of some great takeover matches with American Alpha. And also, we get to hear about how King of the Ring 1993 was influential for both Scott Dawson and Dash Wilder. It's pretty interesting how it all ties together. Also hear about some of their favorite wrestlers, too. Just a lot of cool wrestling talk with The Revival here on a classic episode of the Steve Austin Show. Today in Steve Austin history, today being May 14th. Pretty late day. Steve only had one WCW match on this day, 1992 in Savannah, Georgia. Nikita Koloff defeated Steve Austin. And then in WWF in 1999 in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, WWF World Champion Steve Austin, The Rock, and The Big Show defeated Triple H, The Undertaker, and The Big Boss Man. And then finally in 2001 in Cincinnati, Ohio, at a Monday Night Raw taping, Kane defeated WWF Tag Team Champions, The Two Man Power Trip, WWF World Champion Steve Austin, and WWF Intercontinental Champion Triple H, with Stephanie McMahon in their corner via disqualification in a handicap match. And I'm trying to figure out how fair it is for someone to lose via DQ in a handicap match. It doesn't make sense, does it? Well, that's what happened today on May 14th, this day in Steve Austin history. I got information from thehistoryofwwe.com. All right, folks, thanks for being with us. Coming up in just a second, we're going to have The Revival on a classic episode of the Steve Austin Show.
May is up and running, and excitement in sports has ramped up in a huge way. The NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs, Major League Baseball, and more. Simply put, there's a ton of action that you should be taking advantage of over in the NBA playoffs. The Milwaukee Bucks are dominating in the East. Could the Raptors rise up to the challenge? Over in the West, the Blazers are coming for the top. Will the Golden State Warriors stand tall? Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action. Don't forget to use promo code Podcast One, or text BET NOW to 238-669 to receive a 50% welcome bonus. That's betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts and exclusive partners of Podcast One Sportsnet. We here at the Steve Austin Show have a favorite four-letter F word, free. That's why it's our privilege to introduce you to your new favorite streaming service, Pluto TV. Believe us, You're going to dig it. Pluto TV is the leading free streaming television service. Watch over 100 TV channels and thousands of movies on demand, all completely free. There's also a ton of options for sports, with pro wrestling and MMA available. Pluto TV never asks for a credit card. You don't even need to sign up to watch free. Pluto TV is the easy and completely legal way to watch your favorite TV shows and hit movies for free. And the best part, you can download Pluto TV for free on all your favorite devices today, including your phone, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, smart TVs, PlayStation, and anywhere else you stream. I don't know where else you can stream, but anywhere else you can stream, check out Pluto TV. Never pay for TV again by downloading Pluto TV. Get more info at Pluto.tv.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
Scott Dawson and Dash Wilder have a hell of a match with, who was it again? Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa.
Tommaso Ciampa.
I'm sorry to get his name wrong. It's funny, I heard that name in 2011 when I was running Tough Enough, and all these years later to see him over at NXT kicking ass. Tremendous match. I was talking with Wade Keller the other day. We were breaking down SummerSlam, and he had mentioned he'd watch that pay-per-view. And all of a sudden, Scott, I believe it was you that sent me something on Twitter. We started following each other, hooked up with Dash, and then all of a sudden, here we are talking, but it was good to see that guy still paying dues and finally make it down there. I'll tell you what, when I watched that match, off the charts, I started watching this match because Wade Keller, let me blow a little smoke up you guys for a little second, let me shine you up, get some heat in a little bit. I didn't know what to expect during this match. I know Wade knows a thing or two about a good match if he sees one, and he said this was a badass match, one of the best he's seen in a long time, the way you guys built this thing. So he had set the expectations real high. Start off watching the match, guys start working body part right off the bat. I dug that. And then what I liked about the match was just the layout of the match. Started off working the body part. You guys, vicious, mean, you have a mean streak. Some of the key components I always talk about when in being a good, effective heel is just having a mean streak. And that's what you guys got. You didn't pander to the crowd. You're not begging for approval or trying to elicit a response that's not there. On the other end of the spectrum, your baby faces. I mean, those two guys work their asses off. I always preach fire. Those guys had tremendous fire, and they sold like crazy, as did you guys. A lot of stuff in play here, man. Manipulation of the referee. I don't know that referee's name. Give him a shout out for me. He did a phenomenal job. Pulling on that first hot tag and the second hot tag. A lot of things going on there. Also like the employment of whether you were sending someone in, Scott, or from a headlock position, a tag and dash in. There was so much teamwork in this thing. It was very refreshing. So let me get back to the match. Started watching this match. I said, okay, this is good work. Then I started smiling because I started seeing a lot of things that you don't see anymore in tag team wrestling. And then towards the end, it builds to a tremendous finish. Great finish. I was laughing my ass off. And I was laughing my ass off because I was so entertained to see such high-level work because I'm a huge tag team fan. And I digested the match for a little bit, and then I went back and watched it again. And here's the thing. Watching this match, to me, I picked up a few things, such as setting up for Scott the first DDT off a punch and then getting the DDT. But then setting up with the punch, going for the DDT. But Ciampa, if I'm not mistaken, reversing out of it. You in the submission. Dash comes and makes the save. So there's a lot of key things there. And again, drawing the referee, the one hot tag, pulling the guy off the apron, then feeding on the hot tag, going into the comeback. It was an awesome match. And it was kind of like I watched Breaking Bad and I watched Walking Dead. When you watch those shows, if you're sitting there texting on your phone or trying to peruse the internet, you'll miss something. Same thing with this match. You had to stay glued to the screen to make sure you caught all the detail work. And there was a lot of details in this match. So, swig of beer. I enjoyed the hell out of it. Now, based on your recommendation, I watched the 2 out of 3 falls with you guys working against, I guess, American Alpha.
Yep.
Jason Jordan.
Yes. And Chad Gable.
Same thing from those guys. Obviously, great amateur backgrounds. Sold like hell for you. Jordan could have sold that leg a little bit more on the apron, but still, I mean, the same thing. Those guys had great fire. Let's talk a little bit about you guys now that I've been rambling. Tell you how good you are. Scott, you broke in about 2004, right?
Yep. Right after high school.
And I saw that you're trained by the Maestro, and I said, well, who's the Maestro? Because that's more regional. I've been out of the system for a little bit, and I saw his deep ties into a lot of NWA stuff, old school stuff that I figured maybe you pick up along the way from that guy. Because again, high level stuff that I don't even see being employed. I dare say I'm not trying to put heat on the guys, on you guys, but what you guys are doing right now is so high level. I'm not seeing this on the main roster. Tell me about your break-in period with Maestro.
I broke in with him, like you said, in 2004, and he helped me out a lot, and he preached to me a lot of the old school style. But then also, I was trained by George South as well in Charlotte, and he comes from the NWA territory, and he worked with Flair, he worked with Arn, he worked with Tully, and worked with all those guys. And man, if I messed up in the ring, or if he even saw me putting together a match in the back, he would criticize me, and he would beat me down and make sure that I felt like crap because I wasn't calling in the ring. So coming from that background, it allowed me to think on my own and think on my feet. And also, since I was about 3 years old, I was a huge wrestling fan. I can just vividly remember seeing Gordon Solie interviewing Ric Flair. And that was when I lived in Stone Mountain, Georgia. And that kind of wrestling is what makes me a fan. There's a lyric, I'm sure you know what it is. It's called, I'm not a walk behinder, I'm a new note finder. And I feel like a lot of guys, they're so entrenched with the product today that they see the reactions that people are getting. So it's easy to follow that. It's easy to do the same thing. But for me, I want people to remember me for being different. So if I'm doing the stuff that nobody is doing anymore because it's not 1984, then the people will remember that match. You know what I mean?
Well, and I like you just from the T-shirt. No flips, just fists. Dash, tell me a little about you coming in because, Scott, you're 32. Dash,
yep.
You're 31?
29.
You broke in 2005. Tell me a little about your training background because I couldn't do any research to find out where you came from because, you guys were made for each other. I want to hear where you come from and how you guys put this thing together.
That's a pretty funny story, actually. I was never officially trained. I came from a really poor family, so we couldn't afford to do wrestling training, anything like that. So honestly, I watched wrestling as much as I possibly could. I read the books, like any autobiography that came out, just to get a little bit of inside information. I would watch it, and I studied it so much. I trained myself to get to the point where I could get in the ring and not be a danger to anybody. But luckily, being from North Carolina, being from the South, that we had so many guys like the Rock and Roll still coming around. George South still came around. We had these guys that can take you under their wing and they can teach you everything you needed to know just by watching and listening to the crowd. Like also, I spent a lot of time down at NWA Wildside/Anarchy where AJ Styles is from. So I learned a lot of different stuff there and I just kind of picked it up as I went along and somehow...
You hear?
Yeah, somehow, some way.
Little backyarder, he made it.
So how did you end up just getting a start? I mean, because now, how long have you been in the ring? 9, 10 years?
Yeah, almost 10 now. So there was a really, really small independent federation, where I was from. Small crowds, nobody that had really been like George or anybody like that. But they told us that if we came to the show and set up their ring for them and set up their chairs for them, that whatever time was left over before doors opened, we could get in the ring and train. And there was three or four of us real close friends who would go set up all their stuff for them just to get that hour or two of ring time. And eventually okay, you guys can start on our shows now. And then we just started reaching out as much as we could. One of the first out-of-state bookings I ever got was for Wildside. I emailed Bill Behrens. I said, I've read a lot about Wildside. I've read a lot about the guys that you have had come through there, and I want to come down and I want to wrestle for you. And he got back to us and said, yeah, come on down. And that was probably one of my best learning experiences, just getting to go down there and listen to those guys and watch them. And I soaked it all up as much as I could.
So you guys both in North Carolina now, but Scott, you said earlier you was in Stone Mountain, Georgia.
Yeah.
Is that where you first started out?
No. I was only in Stone Mountain, Georgia until I was about 5 years old.
Okay.
So my dad moved around a lot as far as working. He worked at different power plants and stuff, so he just moved around. And Stone Mountain, Georgia was just one of the places we made a quick stop in.
Hey, going back to your formative years. Dash, you're talking about setting up chairs and stuff like that just to get a little ring time before the show started. And then Scott coming up the way you did. I don't want to ask you about today's numbers, but back in the day when I first started, you know, when they were just beating the crap out of me in Dallas, Hill's coming in to get some heat on me. You know, I don't even know if I was getting paid for that. And 2 months of that, and I headed down to USWA working for Jerry Jarrett. And, you know, that was a weekly territory. We was in the same towns over and over again. And, you know, pretty much my paydays were anywhere between $15 and $20 a night. You're making 400-mile round trips, man. I was starving. Coming up the way you guys did, what was the money situation like at when you guys coming up, Jesus, 10, 15 years behind me?
It was about the same.
Yeah.
That's the crazy thing. It was about the same.
On a good night.
Yeah, on a real good night, we might get a $20 and a hot dog. Yeah, I think I was a bit naive at first. I just loved wrestling so much. I knew what I wanted to do, and I knew I had everything going against me. I was not what you call a body guy. And I'm about 5'10", scratching the surface of 5'11". And so I knew that finding money was going to be hard. So I just wanted to get into wrestling as much as I could. And then when I realized a little bit of value was coming with my work, then I could ask for a little bit of money. But down in North Carolina, there's no athletic commission. There's no nobody governing that state. So anybody, any old, you know, redneck from North Carolina can pick up and get a wrestling ring and run a pawn shop, run a flea market or anything. So they could just hire, you know, or they could quote unquote hire guys to work for them, and they just come in and do it for free. So it was a little bit harder in North Carolina to grab some money. But yeah, I just did whatever I could to make the most out of my situation.
Yeah, Dash, was that the same for you? Were you working a side job to help support your wrestling?
Oh yeah, I worked a few side jobs like at the same time, because I knew that at that point wrestling was not going to pay the bills, but I looked at it kind of like you're making an investment in yourself. It's just like when a doctor goes to school for 6 to 8 years, they're losing tons of money, tons of debt. But when they finally get that degree, they finally get that job, it's all worth it. So I figured I could use the knowledge as currency. That's our money, like picking up this knowledge that we're getting. And when we got to WWE, that would be the final product where we get to finally make money and it all pays off for us.
Hey, man, I remember I've told my story many times. I was 7 or 8 years old, and I was sitting on the floor in Edna, Texas. My mom was reading a magazine behind me, and I was watching Houston wrestling. Dusty Rhodes was bleeding like a stuck pig inside that ring. It was a Sam Houston Coliseum in Houston, Texas. Security guard had a sidearm on. He was slowly walking around that ring. Nobody was doing anything. Everybody was hoping Dusty was going to come out of this bloodbath that he's in. And man, I was so captivated. I look over at my mom and I said, Mom, you know, the security guard had a gun, right? I said, Mom, why don't that security guard help Dusty? And she just kind of rolled her eyes and went back to her magazine. She didn't get it like I did. So I had the fever. So what turned you guys onto the business at an early age? Because you guys are young now. What got y'all started watching the business?
Well, I'd watched it. My dad loved Ric Flair. I mean, he was enamored. He still is. I mean, he enamored with Ric Flair. So I was always a Ric Flair fan. And I grew up with the Crockett's. That's what I grew up with. I watched a little bit of the WWF, but I was, you know, the blood and the guts of the Crockett's is what turned me on to it. But I distinctly remember, even as much as I loved the Crockett's and NWA and stuff like that, I distinctly remember the moment that I looked at my mom and said, like, I want to be a wrestler. And it was King of the Ring 93, and I watched Bret Hart wrestle 3 of the greatest matches I've ever seen in my entire life. And through that whole pay-per-view, man, he told this incredible story. Like, he went in first with Razor Ramon, had a little bit, his fingers were broken down. Went into the ring with Mr. Perfect, his ribs started breaking down, and he limped to the ring with Bam Bam Bigelow, his fingers taped up, his ribs, they're cracked. He goes into the ring with a 300-pound monster, and he just gets heat put on him the whole match, makes small little comebacks, but keeps getting shut down. Finally, at the end of the match, Luna Vachon comes in, nails him with a chair, 1, 2, 3. We got the reverse decision from the ref. They restart the match. He comes off the top with a victory roll, 1, 2, 3, and I jumped up from my couch, and I said, Mama, that's what I want to do. That's what I want to do for a living. And that, man, that's what I wanted to be when I, and all I could think about through school was wrestling. Honest to God, like I was really good in school, but all I could think about was being a professional wrestler. That's it.
And you know, the thing about it, you mentioned Ric Flair. He's my favorite pro wrestler of all time. But when you talk about the grit of what the Crockett's were doing back then in NWA, that's my favorite period of wrestling. I love the Attitude Era. I love what I did. That was fun. But when I go back as a fan, if I'm doing cardio, man, it's mid-80s NWA stuff, mid-South Power Pro, and it's that grit. And when you speak of about a guy like Bret the Hitman Hart, one of my all-time favorite guys, and you just vividly remembering those three matches back from that year, and that was the thing about Bret, telling complex stories, being logical, and just setting the tone, and it was total realism. And that's a big part of what I think you guys do. It's a little faster pace because right now it's 2016, but it's that same grit, laying stuff in, nothing fancy, just good, solid stuff. Dash, what about you? When you started watching the business, what floated your boat? What hooked you?
Pretty much the exact same thing, but I didn't watch it with my mom. My granny was a huge wrestling fan because Asheville, where I'm from, used to be a hotbed for wrestling. So they'd come to buildings there and they'd come to Greensboro and all that, and she would go to every single show, and she had just this library of VHS tapes. It was unreal how many old wrestling shows she had, and she would just... When we came over, she'd put one of them in, just let us run wild. So she would just go cook, make sweet tea, whatever she was doing, and just leave us. And my brothers would watch a little bit, not as much as me. I would just be in front of the TV, just entranced, like just completely soaked in, lost in it. I just never grew out of it. Like, you know, my brothers would watch it, but they weren't as into it. They would move on, and like eventually they just stopped watching. But the more I watched, the more hooked I got.
Alexa isn't the only one with breaking news. Make sure to hang around at the end of this podcast for the latest breaking headlines on the AP News Minute.
Hey, it's Ross Tucker from the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. Check out the Under Review Show with host Damon D here at Podcast One, presented by BetOnline.ag.
Get the odds, news, and insights from real industry insiders. This isn't your typical schlocky picks show. Download new episodes of Under Review, presented by BetOnline, every week on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
Scott, coming up from that country that you're talking about, and you know, with George South, some of those guys in your head, I'm expecting to hear some of the same names, but even some older school names there out of the NWA territory. Talk to me about some of your influences.
Well, I mean, as a kid, you know, your taste changes when you get a little older. As a kid, man, I loved the Bulldogs. I loved the Hart Foundation. And obviously, I was a huge Rock and Roll Express fan. But and then moving on into the 90s even though they weren't the nicest guys, I loved Harlem Heat too. I thought that their teamwork, you could tell they were brothers, but I thought their teamwork was incredible. Fast forwarding to 2016, I got two huge books of DVDs that you wouldn't believe because I'm such a huge wrestling nerd, and about 7 discs of Bootleg Hollywood Blondes. I got about 10 discs of Arn and Tully. But my favorite team of all time, there ain't no question, is Dennis and Bobby. Dennis and Stan get all this praise, Bobby and Stan get all this praise because they did all these fascinating matches and had 5-star classics, and they were great matches, and I love those guys too. But as a tag team and as a unit, trying to get heat, I don't know if there's anybody better than Dennis and Bobby, man. They knew what each other was going to do, and they worked together to make sure that their heat was set and that Babyface was going to make a fiery comeback. And if Babyface slipped on a banana peel or the Midnight's put the banana peel there and made sure they got the cover, they were going to get some heat off of it. But if those baby faces were going to go over, man, they were going to make them the most over act in that territory. So I don't know if anybody's better than Bobby and Dennis.
Hey, you know, I liked Loverboy Dennis Condrey and Bobby Eaton was premier. And then when they brought Stan in. And the thing about it is, Dennis gets forgot a lot just because, you know, he faded out and he just kind of left the scene for a while. And I don't know the reason. I've talked to Jim Cornette many times about that. But, yeah, you talk about basics. But, Dash, you brought up the Brain Busters. I go back, and as much as I love the Midnight Express, I mean, and they're one of my favorite tag teams of all time, and you guys already said rock and roll, you guys could tear the house down with the Rock and Roll Express.
I'm trying to politic to Hunter right now to get the Rock and Roll Express and NXT for us.
I'm telling you what, if you guys could have some matches with those guys, I mean,
they can still go.
You damn right they can. Covered. But those guys, they sold. They put asses in seats. But when I look at some of my favorite tag teams, I throw the Rockers in there, you know. And that was some different kind of work. But those guys were a little bit ahead of their time. And, of course, Sean had a phenomenal single run that he had. But, man, you guys kind of remind me because you're saying Arn Tully. Dude, I got to go back Arn Oley. Because Arn and Oley was kind of the strong man of the team, just that big boxy bully. He kind of worked like a bully. He, you know, kind of hard to get him to sell, but when you did, he'd sell for you. And Ricky Morton's got some good stories about that. And then Arn would come in to light it up a little bit, put some movement in the match, bam, maybe set up something for the heat. And then Oley was kind of that heater. So I just really like that Oley-Arn connection. And again, Tully and Arn were great as a brain buster, but going back to that, just that gritty NWA style, I dug those two together. When you look at the tag team situation right now down in NXT, man, I'm not trying to put any heat on you guys, but there's a bunch of good teams down there. What are your thoughts? Why do you think on the main roster, tag team wrestling has seemingly, it's coming back now, but for a while, you know, with Davey and Dynamite back in the day, with the Hart Foundation, you know, there's been, and with Action Smash, there's been great tag teams there, and Rockers came in, but for a while it kind of died down, and it seems like it's being reinvigorated in NXT, and I love that. Don't you feel like for a while there it died down on the main roster?
I agree, and I have a theory on that. I think that, like, Rock and Rolls, and like you said, the Bulldogs and stuff, they knew that they had some sort of shortcoming in their game, whether it was their size or their body or couldn't talk or whatever it was, and so you got paid, and you know this too, at the time they got paid by what position they were in the card and what kind of effect they had on the shows. So, you know, Ricky and Robert are talking to each other and they're saying, hey, man, we got to work together and make sure that we tear the house down so we can make this much money. So they knew their place and they knew they needed to work together. And in comes, you know, a couple of years, a few years later, 10 years later, here comes guaranteed contracts. So you're getting paid either way. And now I think that, and I could be completely wrong, but I think that people might have got a little, when the contract came around, got a little comfortable or got a little selfish maybe and realized, hey, I'm getting paid, so I'm just going to get my stuff in and make sure I look like $1 million. That's my theory on it. As far as NXT goes, me and Dash, as soon as he came in, and I knew he was coming in, we talked for a while. As soon as he came in, I said, hey, man, look, they don't have a clue what to do with me. You know, I'm not the kind of guy that they would want to invest a lot of TV time in and a lot of money in.
This was in a singles row, correct?
Right, yeah. Okay. Yeah. But with you coming in, man, we can do something special because we know each other and we respect each other. I said, if they put us as a tag team, which was the plan, if they put us as a tag team, look, everything we're going to do is as a unit. I mean, we're going to stop the baby faces as a unit. We're going to bump and feed as a unit. We're going to hit our moves as a unit. It ain't about me. It ain't about you. It's about us and how we can make this match and make ourselves as a team more valuable to the company. And I think at a certain time that got lost for whatever reason, whether my theory is completely wrong or not. I think it got lost.
Yeah. I think that there wasn't the longevity that there was back in the 80s and the 90s. Like, you had teams that were lifelong tag teams. Like, you see Arn and Tully, like, they were tagging for years. Same with the Hart Foundation. Same with Rock and Roll. Same with Midnight. So they were up and down the road for decades. Like, they stayed together, so they knew each other. They knew how to, Scott said, compliment each other, how to play off each other, how to work together. And nowadays, I felt like for a while there, like, the last great tag team period was when the Hardys, the Dudleys, and Edge and Christian were around. And that's because those guys all wanted to work together to have the best tag team match they could, and not just, you know, what's going to make me look the best?
Yeah.
How am I going to stand out here? It's how can we all have the best match and add the most to the show, and that way we can all elevate each other together.
Yeah. And that's so important to me, is to put the time and the years in, because you can have two great singles workers. Here's a classic case in point. My favorite pro wrestler of all time is Ric Flair. You can put him in a tag match with Arn Anderson or anybody. And they could have some good tag matches, don't get me wrong, because Ric Flair can work his ass off and he can make a broomstick look good. Yeah, yeah. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you don't have the intricacies or the high-level stuff which you guys were doing in the last pay-per-view match, because they're not truly a team. And to be a team, I mean, you have to, just like you just laid it out, Scott, you're thinking as a team. It's we. It's not me. It's not you. It's we. I think that's a big part of it. I'm glad that the tag team situation is going as good as it is right now. When you guys were out there just this past week or so ago, as we speak, and when this podcast drops on Tuesday, when you guys went out to Brooklyn facing Gargano and Ciampa, when you first locked up, long tie up, good stuff. I'm thinking, okay, man, what's going on here? What are these guys going to do? That crowd, you worked them, you let them bite in, and you had them hook, line, and sinker pretty much the whole damn ride. And when you knew you had them, because they give you a lot of time for that match, and you had them with all the teamwork, pulling that ref, two missed hot tag opportunities, all the other stuff that you did, the leg on the rope for the false finish, Premier, great timing. Were you guys just in heaven? Because there's just some nights when you go out there and you're in a zone, much too like when I was in 13 with Brett or 17 with Rock, and you just know if for some reason it's your night and things work out like they do with that crowd, because that could be a difficult crowd.
Oh, yeah. It was emotional. I mean, I hate a guy from North Carolina who claims to be the salt of the earth saying it's emotional, but it wasn't emotional. I mean,
it is. Make no mistake about it. Yeah. If you ain't emotionally invested, why should they be emotionally invested? Keep going.
It's 22 minutes of goosebumps, as I like to call it. So, yeah, as soon as we locked up, man, which is my favorite part of a match, and not the false finishes, not the big moves, not the dives off the top. My favorite part of the match is a lockup, because I'm going to tell you whether I am invested in the match or not. And when I locked up with them, I bagged them to the corner, and we wrestled around a little bit and shoved each other in the face. And none of this stuff is we talk in the back and say we're going to do this. You know what I mean? It just happens. But we were getting gritty and raw. And actually, I want to back up a little bit. I don't know if you saw the entrance, but we were coming down the ramp, and it's our time to shine. You know what I mean? It's the Revival's time to get some stuff in. The camera's on us. And we look up, and Tommaso's standing in our corner, and Johnny Gargano has got his head sticking out through our rope. And I looked at Dash, and I said, I'm taking him down. I climbed up the damn steps. I gut pushed him. He fell off. I shoved Gargano in the face to let him know that it's all.
And when he did that, you could hear the crowd reacted to it.
Yeah,
like, there was a gasp, like, oh man, these guys they're already off to the races.
So right then I knew right then that we they were going to bite to what we wanted to feed them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's those times, like you said, where you just know, and like as soon as the push happened, and you heard the crowd, like the collective intake of the air, like. Like, I just felt like everything was already going to start clicking. Like, it was going to be the night.
And there's a thing. There's a tricky little thing there. When people think, oh, the entrance. Entrance don't mean nothing. You just walk into the ring. No, BS.
Well,
entrance
means
anything. Whether it's my BMF walk, you guys coming in and saying, hey, you know, as a babyface team, if they're crowding your territory, your home corner, yeah, what you guys did, if you don't set the tone, or if you're scared to set the tone, or, hey, you know, this wasn't planned, I can't do it. No.
Yeah.
You got to, if they ain't showing you respect, you've got to get respect.
Yeah, and just like, kind of like you said, it is a respect factor, but it's a respect factor outside the ring and inside the ring. The fans bid on it, man. And I knew going into it, like, that's how we're going to, when I was walking down the ramp and I saw them standing there, I was like, hell yeah, this is exactly what we need. They're standing up to us, and we're going to stand right back up to them. And people can emotionally understand that, whether it's they're standing up to their boss or to a bully, they can connect with that. They can connect with someone having some sort of altercation.
Hey, man, you're at NXT. You guys are selling out arenas. How exciting is that for you guys?
Yeah, it's incredible. This is the dream. This is what we wanted to do for, you know, our whole life is travel around, work out, eat, and wrestle. So we're not on the road as much as the cats on Raw and SmackDown are, but we get out quite a bit. Almost every single weekend, we're out on the road more often than not, and we're doing these live events overseas, and they're drawing some good houses there. So it's the dream come true. Obviously, the ultimate goal is to get to Raw or SmackDown, and then headline WrestleMania and do all that stuff, and that is the plan, and that's what we will do. But for now, we're having fun here at NXT, making it a brand, making it the hottest brand in sports entertainment, alongside, you know, guys like Samoa Joe and Shinsuke Nakamura, and with the help of American Alpha and Finn Balor and Bayley and Hunter at the helm of it. it's fun right now to make this brand mean something. It's fun to be a part of what something so special.
Well, I think it is special, and I enjoy the flavor. I enjoy the vibe. I enjoy the pacing of it. And it seems like you guys got a lot of freedom down there. Talk to me or talk to us about a day in the life. If you're not on the road, I know you guys have television taping. Tomorrow, as we speak, is going to be Thursday. So you'll have television taping. But what is a basic day for you guys? If you're not in Carolina, you're at the Performance Center. As far as, you know, working in the ring, going through workouts on the weights, what is a day in the life for you guys?
And normally, you know, if say it's a Monday or a Tuesday, you come in, you know, like there's different groups, so there's different classes. There's about 10 to 12 people in each one. So like me and Scott and a few others are in a class, and we come in the mornings, and first things we do, we go into the gym, and we have our strength coach session where we get a great workout. The strength coach here is unbelievable. Like he's the one you actually, he does the Stone Cold impression, the really good Stone Cold impression.
Yeah, that was awesome.
That's it. A great guy. He worked for the Texans for a little bit, and now he's here, and he trains us like not only to look the best that we can, but also like to avoid injuries or to rehab if there's any nagging injuries. So like he trains each person to what they need. So that's great. And then there'll be a little bit of a break where you come down and you do 3 hours in ring. You stretch out, you roll out a little bit, and then you guys just kind of do some stuff. You just wrestle around, get a feel, and then you can have like brainstorming sessions where you can come up with ideas and try to bounce things off each other, see what sticks, see what doesn't work for you. And so you just get like, it's a really good way to get a bunch of different opinions and a bunch of different flavors and find out what works for you. And then, like, you know, some days we have like just the skull session where we'll come in and we'll just watch tape, whether it's our matches from the previous weekend or you pull up a classic on the network. So you watch it again with your group and with your coach. You just break it down bit by bit, like, you know.
Which coach will be working with you guys? Because I know Matt Bloom's kind of the head coach over there right now. So do you guys have different specific coaches for whether it's a tag or a single?
Yeah, we have. Well, they're broke down into different categories, I guess. So we've got some beginners, we've got some, you know, intermediate and experienced and stuff like that. Right now, we're going through a transition period because, you know, we've got the brand split. So some of our coaches may be getting called up to that main roster soon. So right now, head coach Matt Bloom is taking our class. He's taking our class. We have him and Terry Taylor as the two guys that are the main coaches here. And Matt Bloom, he didn't get as much success here in the States as he probably should have, and he didn't get as much success as he had got in Japan. But, man, he's a wealth of knowledge, and he's changed the whole atmosphere of this place.
Yeah, the vibe that he brought in and the way he just kind of brought everybody up, it's unbelievable because now, like, everybody interacts and has ideas for each other and helps each other out, and it's like everybody just wants everybody to succeed.
Yeah.
That's contagious. Everybody that comes in now and they're welcomed in, and then immediately you start trying to think of ways you can help people and make sure that their transition here is a success. So
when you guys are down there, are they feeding you guys and housing you? How does that work?
We take care of our own housing and our own food, stuff like that. If we are here for, say, a few hours, you know what I mean, where we don't have access to food, they make sure to take care of us and feed us and then give us whatever we need to go through the day. But yeah, as far as that goes, it's just like any other job, you know, where we're taking care of ourselves and making sure we have a place to stay and a roof over our heads.
Yeah, the Performance Center is pretty much a full-time job. Like everybody lives in Orlando. So, I mean, you come in and you do your hours like you would a 9-to-5. Some of the guys, like when they go up, they get to move home and do whatever else. But if you're at the Performance Center, then you live in Orlando. So, I mean, that's your day-to-day.
Yeah.
So, like, you have your own home, you buy your own groceries, you have, like, your family down here. It's whatever you would do normally.
Hey, what have you guys thought about? I've just finished watching you guys' match, and then I clicked forward in the pay-per-view. I was getting ready for this podcast, but I saw just a few moments of Asuka versus Bayley, and I'm really high on both gals. I didn't see the entirety of the match. I saw about the last 4 minutes going into the finish, and, man, those girls were giving it everything they had. And I know they had some, Sasha, Charlotte, Becky Lynch, a few of the other women were out in the crowd watching this event. Speak about the women's wrestling, because, man, you talk about I love women's wrestling. When it's great women's wrestling, and they have really raised the bar with all those fantastic women down there, because those chicks are going for it, man. Oh, yeah. That's pro wrestling.
Yeah, yeah. You talk about somebody's got a chip on their shoulder, man. That's them girls. They got a big old chip on their shoulder. Actually, before we start this podcast, when your modem was messing up, Bailey stood in here for about 20 minutes. She wanted to say hi to you, but she dipped out and left.
Got nervous.
Yeah, she got nervous. But man, Asuka and Bailey, that match was so physical and so emotionally draining too. Those girls worked their butts off. And then the next night, in my opinion, SummerSlam was a great card, but in my opinion, Sasha and Charlotte stole that show from underneath every guy's feet, man. That was a great match.
I really thought I loved AJ Cena because that was a hell of a damn match. And the other ones, I thought that their crowd would be a little bit more involved in those matches than they were. The thing about the Charlotte Sasha match that I liked so much, there was a few botches in there, a little blown spot here or there. But towards the end, it was the emotional part of Charlotte. Just she won't be in the shadow of Ric Flair because I think she's his daughter, and she'll form her own legacy. Man, you talk about genetics or having that greatness born into her, and obviously she works her tail off. But when she started just kind of pushing Sasha around, saying "I'm better than you," and it's like, holy smokes! I mean, that like talk about that emotional level when we started Scott and Dash. You know, that's what grabbed me, and because it was real. You can it tickles tackles, a little sequence, miss step or whatever. But when you grab those people, had a couple of high risk moves in there that really scared me as far as Sasha goes.
Yeah.
I was invested in that match because those women told me a story, because that belt meant everything to both of them. And it does for a shoot, just like your belts mean to you. When it's real, it's real. And it's a show. You buy tickets, come in. And when you come in, you want to come in under the auspice of, this is why I'm here. I want to get in the show. And there was times back in the day, sometimes, you know, if you work in a garden or some house that could have the potential to be kind of hard, sometimes you're waiting on a certain match to come on. But then all of a sudden, it's like, hey, man, this is the real stuff. I believe in heart, and I believe in the reality of the product. If you're giving them something real, if you're giving them emotion, they will buy in.
All these girls we have down here, like a lot of them are up there now, but they go for it every time they're in the ring. Like, they're not phoning it in. They're not just trying to coast off like the reputation that the division has now. Like, they are changing the division, and like, they're not just good women, good wrestlers for women. They are just good wrestlers.
Period. Yeah.
Like,
and Charlotte may be one of the top three athletes we got in the whole company, man. She's incredible.
Well, I believe that. But if you go back to last year, I guess it was probably at Brooklyn as well, but it was the whatever pay-per-view it was when Bayley was working with Sasha, and Bayley had a hurt hand, and Sasha started banging it on that staircase, and then she ripped it off, and then she smushed it between the stairs and the ring, and she went after that body part. Those girls ripped the roof off the building that night,
going into
that bank statement, kicking off those ropes, rolling back into the other thing. It's just at a very, very high level. I just wanted to mention the women real quick because I know you guys down at NXT, and tell Bailey I said hi because I'm such a big fan of hers. Before I let you guys go, I got to shave all this trash off my face and go hit a meeting, and I appreciate your patience. I turned my phone into a hotspot because my internet is truly down over here, and this was an opportunity for me to talk to the Revival, probably my favorite, without a doubt, my favorite tag team going right now.
Don't give me goosebumps.
Scott Dawson and Dash Wilder, but I got a few notes on you guys, and I wanted to understand, before we leave off on a light note, your love of coffee.
Got it right here, Jack.
There it is.
All day, every day. Caffeine. I mean, it gets such a bad rep, but why? I mean, it makes you feel good. I wake up in the morning, I have my coffee pot set for 6:30 in the morning. I wake up, I take my first swig of coffee, and I get a euphoric feeling. Why don't I want to feel that feeling all damn day? It's because of coffee. We live and die by coffee, and that's okay with me.
I make a pot when I wake up in the morning, and then I stop at Starbucks on my way into work in the morning.
Yeah.
Like, just because it's my routine, and it makes me happy. Like, it feels good to have this cup.
Yeah, if you got any connections, Folgers, Maxwell House, all the brand, give me a call, Jack, because I will promote you.
We'll mention all you guys.
Yeah. Man, I don't have any coffee connections, but was there anything that we talked about that we didn't talk about that you want to bring up before we sign off?
Oh, yeah. There is one thing I want to talk about. We talked about us enough. I want to talk about you just a second.
I got something I need to get off my chest.
So there was a match, all right? Well, let me back up. We had our match in Brooklyn. And there's a moment in the match you probably don't even know. Nobody probably knows besides me. I bent over and some sweat ran off my nose, okay? Just ran off the tip of my nose. And that made me realize when I watched it back, hell yeah, we got a good match. There's a match 22 years ago to the day that you had my favorite WCW match of all time. You versus, and I tell everybody here at the Performance Center,
sure
I'm always watching this match. You versus Ricky Steamboat, Clash of the Champions, 22 years ago today. You guys are battling it out on the top rope, man, and you're chugging away. You're slugging. You're hitting him. You're knocking him off. He falls off the rope. He comes back up. You knock him off again, finally get him done, and sweat drips off your nose, and that, to me, is professional wrestling, Jack. That is what wrestling's about. That's what a wrestler is, and I just want to let you know that match is one of my top five favorite matches of all time.
Dash, did you have one thing to get in?
Grab your Kleenex for this one. Okay, yeah, this is a sad story. I don't care if it kind of ruins the reputation that we have or not, but the build-up to WrestleMania 17, you and The Rock, the best video package build-up of all time. Like, the anticipation for it was amazing. I didn't come, like I said, from a lot of money, so I saved up for as long as I could. And before the pay-per-view, I ordered the foam replica Smoking Skull belt and the camouflage Austin 316 hat. And I sat there on my couch, and I watched WrestleMania with my hat on and my foam Smoking Skull title. And when you turn on The Rock and you join Vince, I've never been more heartbroken in my life. I threw my hat down on the floor, threw my title down on the floor, walked outside. I didn't want anybody to see me because I was so heartbroken. But I sat out there for a little bit and I said to myself, you know what? He's still Stone Cold. I'm still going to cheer for him. So I went back in, picked up my stuff off the floor, I put it back on, and I still decided to cheer you no matter if you were heel or face.
But you know what? It goes back all those years, me doing that, and you taking your stuff off and having to walk outside and kind of regather yourself. It's emotion. And it goes back to the first part of this podcast when we were talking. And so if I was able to connect with you on that level and we connected and you were living vicariously through the stuff that I was doing, all of a sudden I took a wrong turn and that upset you, golly, that means that I was doing it the best I could. The storyline was the best it was. I was in there with the great one, the one and only Rock. And that package, that with Paul Heyman and Jim Ross narrating that thing, down to Limp Bizkit, Chocolate Starfish, whatever it was, My Way, was just an unbelievable combination. And all the elements combined, all the stars aligned, and it was absolute magic. But it all goes back to reality, emotion, and belief, and the suspension of disbelief. That's what our business is about. I had a great time talking to you guys. I loved watching your matches last night. Again, like I said, I started smiling during that first round, and then I started laughing towards the end because I was enjoying things that I hadn't seen in a long-ass time. And then I watched the match with the American Alpha, and that was another one. Give all the guys that I just mentioned props, and tell that referee, he was a damn good referee in those matches. He was there for you guys, and a lot of times a referee is a forgotten figure, a forgotten man out there. If he's not enforcing the rules, if he's not in the right place at the right time, it can be an absolute cluster muck, and that guy was in the right place at the right time. And I think you guys know that, especially with as much attention to detail in a tag match, working with four guys rather than two in a single, he's got his work cut out for him to stay out of the way and be in the right place at the right time.
Yep. They get overlooked a lot, but man, we've got, I think, I hope I don't make anybody upset, but I think we got the best referees in the world down here, and they know what their job is, and they work hard for us to make sure that we look good and to make sure the match looks good. Yeah, that referee in Brooklyn that night, Drake, was on his game that night. You're right.
He was, but then again, it was the timing and the way you guys laid it out, and also it was Gargano Ciampa being everybody. Dude, five guys telling a story, and they told a damn good one. I enjoyed the hell out of it. Guys, I look forward to seeing you in person again. I've been talking to Triple H one of these days about trying to get down there to Orlando and just talking to you cats and just seeing what everybody's doing out there and checking out the facility. Maybe that day will come soon. Until then, I think I got a chance to see you guys work part of a match down in Dallas last year for WrestleMania, wherever it was. Didn't get a chance to sit down and talk to you. Y'all drink beer?
Steve, give us that IPA, Jack.
Yeah, bring us El Segundo.
Okay. I look forward to seeing you guys. I'll bring the beer. We're not going to go crazy. We're just going to shoot the breeze, and we'll talk wrestling and drink some beer.
Sounds good. If you make it down here, I got an air mattress for you.
I've been on an air mattress before. Won't be my first one. Guys, I appreciate it. Best of luck to you. Keep doing what you're doing because it's working.
All right. Thank you so much, Steve. Appreciate you having us on.
Guys can be terrible at taking care of their health, whether it's a knee injury, bad back, or something worse. Guys are usually more comfortable rubbing some dirt on it than seeing a doctor. I've been guilty of it myself. The same is true for erectile dysfunction. Studies show 70% of guys who experience ED don't get treated for it. Thankfully, our friends at Roman are here to help with a simple, secure way to get checked out by a doctor and get treated for ED online. With Roman, there's no waiting rooms, awkward face-to-face conversations, or uncomfortable trips to the pharmacy. Roman lets you handle everything discreetly online. All you have to do is visit GetRoman.com/Austin and complete an online visit. Then just talk to a doctor to find out what is safe and appropriate for you when it comes to ED. You'll get genuine medication delivered to your door in discreet, unmarked packaging. Again, just for listeners of the Steve Austin Show, go to Roman.com/Austin for a free online visit and figure out what will work for you when it comes to overcoming ED. Rubbing dirt on it is not going to fix it. One more time, that's GetRoman.com/Austin for your free online visit. Check it out. And hey, man, while you're online, you should get your car insurance figured out. Go to GEICO.com, and in 15 minutes, you can be saving 15% or more on car insurance. That's right. Save hundreds of dollars on car insurance at GEICO.com. Extra money in your pocket? It may just be the most rewarding thing you do today. All right, I'm giving Sean a go-home cue, so let's wrap it up for this week. Make sure you check out podcast1.com and subscribe to the Steve Austin Show so you don't miss any of these classic episodes. Before I ride off in the sunset, I do want to throw out a couple of plugs. I still got a beer. It's the badass Broken Skull IPA, the finest IPA in the United States of America, and that's the bottom line. Made by El Segundo Brewing Company. You can find Broken Skull IPA at Whole Foods and Total Wines if you live in Cali. If you ain't in Cali, you're probably SOL. And if you're looking to get a badass pocket knife, I got two for you. Cold steel Broken Skull knife, cold steel working man knife. Get them at my Amazon store, amazon.com/shop/Steve Austin, or go to the Cold Steel Knives website and check out all their badass knives. Also, one more big shout out to all my sponsors to make this show possible. That's how I'm able to bring this show to you free twice a week. Please support them because they support us. For more info, check out the podcast description to this episode for details. Folks, I am on social media, Twitter and Instagram, @SteveAustinBSR. Folks, I'll be back soon, but until then, my name is Steve Austin, and I will catch your ass down the road.
This has been a Podcast One production. Download new episodes of The Steve Austin Show every Tuesday at podcast1.com. That's podcastone.com.